Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to Pain in the Arsenal podcast episode 18. I'm here with Henry and Josh, and really I shouldn't be putting on such a happy voice because we are talking to you in a rather sombre mood. Arsenal were... Can you have a 1-0 thrashing? Is that a thing?
We just proved that you can.
Yeah, Arsenal were thrashed 1-0 by Spurs on Saturday lunchtime. It was a pretty depressing performance and result. And yeah, I mean, it ruined my weekend. Henry, did it ruin your weekend?
Yeah, my weekend was ruined by the fact that both Arsenal and Wales lost. So I had a pretty awful sporting weekend.
Yes, they did. The rugby did make up for Arsenal's loss.
And by the way, it was a try. It was a try. For those who were watching the rugby, it was a try. Regardless, carry on. Proceed.
For you, Josh, and other Americans, a try is like a touchdown. Apart from instead of just being in the area, you have to actually put the ball on the ground and have some form of downward pressure.
This means nothing to me, but thank you for explaining.
Yeah, so and there was downward pressure, to be fair. But, you know, screw you, Wales.
gee, thanks.
Josh, was your weekend ruined by the North London derby?
Well, it's not over yet, but thus far it's been ruined, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, as I should say, we're recording on Sunday evening, so for me and Henry, I'm already getting depressed about, you know, Monday. But for Josh, it's lunchtime, so for him, he's still got a whole day to go.
That's right.
Right, let's dig into the North London derby. Henry, I know that... Wenger has come under quite a lot of criticism for his tactics. Mm-hmm. You wanted to give a defence of him first, and we will obviously discuss this more in depth in a second. So I'll give the floor to you first. Why do you think he made the right decisions before the game?
I mean, I won't deny the fact that we are very much an attack-first team. But for years now, we have criticised Wenger for not taking a more defensive approach in big games, especially away from home. I thought that the personnel decision to include Elneny or to play three in midfield was the right one. And I didn't mind playing on the counter-attack because we have the quality in Mkhitaryan and Ozil to be able to provide Aubameyang, who is lightning fast, with the adequate... through balls. But yesterday it just didn't work. Our attacking output was poor. Our passes were sloppy for large parts of the game as well. And in the end, it seemed as the game wore on, we were just getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And they bullied us from the front yesterday. They defended really, really well as an entire team, not just as a defensive unit.
Yeah, I think credit should be given to Spurs, which is something that I never like to do. But they were excellent, especially in midfield. Like you said, Eric Dier, Moussa Dembélé, they really kind of they suffocated Arsenal's counterattacks early as well. They didn't even, it wasn't like they had to wait for the move to develop and then they kind of stepped in. Before they even got going, Arsenal were under immediate pressure and the distribution was poor because of it, or inaccurate, or a little bit wayward. My problem really is not—it's not even in the personnel he played. I like the fact that he played three in midfield. I thought that was important. I didn't necessarily mind the inclusion of Elneny, given that Ramsey was injured, who I think was a major blow, a major absence. And I'll get onto another major absence later, who is one that hasn't been talked about as much. But for me, it was more about the approach that was made by Wenger. I wanted to see Arsenal really be quite aggressive and press high up the pitch and kind of do what Spurs did to Arsenal, play a high line and try and suffocate the game from the front, from their attacking players. I know Wenger said after the game that he felt that they had chances. He felt that his players had chances to score in the first half, and I think it was Jack Wilshere said the same thing, that the game was there for them in the first half. And I do agree there were moments. Mesut Ozil made a couple of odd decisions, which is very rare for him. Mkhitaryan, obviously, who was very poor for the majority of the game. He had a couple of poor passes, or that cross in particular to Aubameyang where he skewed it miles high and wide. Pretty ugly. Ugly, is that a word?
No, it is.
In an ugly fashion. So, yeah, there were chances there, but I guess we'll delve into this a little bit more, but for me, I would have rather seen a different approach made. Josh, were you happy to see Wenger play a more pragmatic counter-attacking style that we have been asking for in these big games on Saturday?
I mean, I've kind of got two ways of looking at it. I wish he would have gone more attack-oriented, because you really have to understand our strengths and weaknesses. Our strength is obviously in our attacking. It's not in our defending. We proved that all season. And I don't know why you'd all of a sudden put more faith in your defense in an away game, which has been a problem all year. That said, I like the counterattacking idea given the personnel that we have, but we didn't use it that well. I mean, I was listening to Lee Dixon announce the game on CNBC, and he kept talking about how you've got Aubameyang up front. Why aren't we sending more balls forward, over the top, just sending them out there to see if he can latch onto them, if he can catch up to them? Because every time we did, one time we got a corner, the one time he was incorrectly ruled offsides, one time he was correctly ruled offsides, but every time it was uncomfortable for the Spurs defense. It just felt like we didn't do that. We were too intent on... I thought it was a really slow build-up. I didn't see much counterattacking, you know, expertise there. I didn't see... Mm. I mean, obviously, Mkhitaryan and Ozil not being able to play a pass was a bit of a problem, but... It didn't feel, if you're going to counterattack, you got to do it quickly because you got the people to do it quickly. You can't sit there and wait for it to happen to you. And I think Elneny and Xhaka were both kind of guilty of taking their time a bit. And Wilshere was too. I mean, it comes to the point where if you're going to be pressed that high, there's got to be some way to relieve that pressure. And I think the best thing they could have done was to just try to give Aubameyang space to run because they were holding a high line. I really believe he could have found more space in behind if we would have just gave him the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, and I mean, Henry certainly makes a good point. We have asked Wenger to be more pragmatic in his approaches, especially away from home, especially against the big teams. And that is something that on Saturday he did, and it's something that he did against Chelsea early in the season and in the first leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final when Arsenal got 0-0 draws in both. And they were successful strategies that were implemented well. The problem for me is that really, it's clearly something that they don't practice in training. They don't practice how to defend and play on the counter-attack. You contrast that to a team like Chelsea or a team like Liverpool, for example. Even Liverpool, who have a poor defence, they are masters of the counter-attack because of their time that they put in and the understanding that players like Salah and Mane and Firmino and Coutinho, when he was there, they have this innate ability and innate awareness of where the other one is. Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang and Ozil have played one game together, essentially. And it's something that Arsenal don't practice at London Colney anyway. So this is a strategy that, while in theory should work, is something that they're not experts at. And that really, I guess, really threw them off their natural game. And I would have much rather seen Wenger implement a natural game. So... Henry, do you kind of, I guess, do you attribute the faults to Wenger, or do you attribute the faults to the lack of practice, or do you attribute the faults to the players for being unable to execute this game plan?
I think it's, upon reflection and considering what you guys have said, I can completely understand what the angle from which you're coming from, and partly, I would attribute that more so the lack of familiarity with the system per se. I would attribute that to Wenger. But I thought the application of some of the players, especially with regards to passing yesterday, was really poor.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
And I don't think the players did themselves any favours, really, especially in the second half. I thought in the first half we did okay because I thought we looked relatively solid. One chance creeps to mind, but besides that, I thought we did okay. Second half was a completely different story. We just seemed to crumble.
Yeah, and Wenger did make the distinction, to be fair to him, in his post-match press conference. He said, I thought in the first half we were excellent, and in the second half I thought we were very poor, and we were lucky to lose only 1-0. So that is a comment that Wenger also would agree with, in fairness. It's not like he was not willing to accept that the second half performance just wasn't good enough. I think more from Wenger's point of view and also Jack Wilshere's point of view was that in the first half, or at least by half time, Arsenal should have been 2 or 3 goals to the good had they been a bit more clinical, a bit more ruthless, especially with that final ball or that, or It was the decision making, really. They often chose to make the wrong pass at the wrong time, or they chose to dribble with the ball when they should have been releasing players, and it was disappointing to see, and I guess un-Arsenal like, really, for a lot of the game. That, I guess, is an attacking perspective or an attacking issue. Obviously, Wenger chose to rely on his defence. In a back four, that means that it was Mustafi and Koscielny at the heart of it. Josh, how do you think the athletic but perhaps slightly rash pair got on Saturday?
I actually thought they were pretty good. But when you ask them to do so much, eventually there are going to be problems. I mean, you look at who took the most touches on the team. It was Skrodja Mustafi, and Koscielny wasn't far behind. He was right in the middle of the pack. They were heavily involved in the game. And when you play a team like Spurs that has so many capable attackers and you're relying on those two guys to do so much, it's going to get dicey. I think they both upheld their end of the bargain very well, though. I mean, I thought Mustafi was a bit better. I didn't really have any big problems with him. I think there was one moment where I kind of shook my head in dismay at something he did, but it didn't end up hurting us. And I don't blame Kish.
I seem to do that with Mustafi pretty much every game. He's like, what are you doing? Why have you just done that?
I thought he was really good, though, and I thought Koscielny, I don't really blame him for the goal. You can't. That was just a perfect delivery, and yep. Kane read it quicker than Koscielny could. There's nothing he can do about that. I don't think they were much at fault, and I actually thought Bellerin was pretty good as well. I mean, he did a very good job of keeping Son under wraps. I mean, again... You can't expect a defender to shut a guy down the entire time. If they do, it's a master performance. None of them had master performances. They were beaten at times, but I think overall they won out more than the attackers did. I thought, honestly, Monreal was perhaps the worst because he took a much more central approach to it and really relied on Mkhitaryan to cover the winger or the overlap from Trippier, which was dicier, and I think he did get kind of burnt a few times. But again, expecting a masterclass from a shaky defense away in front of a record-setting crowd is a tough ask, and I think they did pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, Henry, what do you think about Mustafi and Koscielny and the defense as a whole?
I mean, I'd agree for the most part. I thought they were solid, first half in particular, but second half, a lot of the issues that I have with them seem to arise. I think that while both are incredibly athletic, and that's a major plus for them, I think they lack positional awareness and can both be a little rash at times. There were numerous occasions I can recall where Mustafi was a little rash. There was an occasion where Dele Alli was played through, and Koscielny, rather than chase down Dele Alli, looks over to see whether he's offside before he continues to chase him down. I mean, it just seems, again, it's probably more down to the fact that, obviously, attack is always our natural mindset, but I thought that their deficiencies creeped up on them in the second half, especially when Tottenham were really on top within the first 20 minutes of that second half.
Yeah, I think it's an odd one, because in terms of the natural abilities, both players have everything you could want in a centre half. They're quick, they're athletic, they're strong, they're good in the air, even though they lack a little bit of height. They can read the game, for the most part, fairly well. Just every now and then, they make these decisions that I can't understand. I don't understand what they're thinking. It's not, and I guess, I don't know. It's difficult to know, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just wanted to go back to Bellerin. I thought he was brilliant. Again, from a defensive standpoint, again, much like a lot of players, Son, a little sloppy with his passing, but I recall Son beating him on the inside once, but I don't recall him going round him at any time during the game. And I'd rather the winger come inside anyway, where we have a natural drifting defence anyway, rather than go around the outside. So props to Bellerin for his defending, but I always have issues with Arsenal and their defence, simply because we are prone to these mental errors seemingly on a weekly basis.
Yeah, there were a number of moments where Bellerin looked like he was going to get burned by Son, and then he kind of made a last-ditch block or tackle or, yeah. or, or I thought he did well because Spurs clearly highlighted that they were very clever with Ali and Eriksen. They allowed them to drift around, and they said, "Son, you stay wide, and then Trippier on the right hand side, you stay wide, and we're going to use these switch passes from deep midfield right out wide, and we're going to isolate you one on one with Bellerin and Monreal, and then we're going to put a lot of crosses into the box because we believe that Harry Kane can outmuscle Koscielny and Mustafi." And there were three headers, weren't there, that I can think of: the goal, the one immediately after the goal, and then the one in the first half, where really he could well have scored all three. He could very easily have scored a hat-trick of headers, and it was a clear tactic of Spurs that they said, we're going to stretch the pitch wide with Son on one side and Trippier on the other side, and we're going to use the physical presence of Kane in the centre of the pitch to try and out-muscle Koscielny and Mustafi. And Bellerin, I think, held up very, very well, because Son is an excellent player. He's quick, he's direct, he can dribble, he's got great balance. He's more than willing to take a few risks with his touches and stuff, and I thought Bellerin held up very well, which is surprising given his performances for the most part this season. I don't think he's necessarily been the most reliable of defenders, put it that way, especially positionally, and I thought on Saturday he played very well. He's probably Arsenal's best player.
I mean, for me, he's very good when he's isolated in a short and confined space. Where I think he struggles is where the game is very open and then he has to take control of more defensive space, per se. He's very much like Mustafi and Koscielny. If he's in close quarters with his direct opponent, I think he's very good, obviously because of his athleticism. But when the game is, let's say, bigger, I think he struggles there simply because, by trade, much like everyone in the Arsenal team, and as we've mentioned already, his natural instinct is to play slightly more aggressive with regards to getting towards the opposition goal.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And obviously when the game is a bit more stretched out, it's more important to be positionally sound and to have a good decision-making off the ball, and that is something that Bellerin certainly does not have. Or his pace can make up for in when the game's a bit tighter, a bit smaller, a bit more compact, a little bit cuter maybe. Right, let's move on to the substitutions. Before we talk about Lacazette and his troubles, Josh, what did you think of the substitutions in general and the way that Wenger set up the team for the final half an hour or so, and then obviously the introduction of Welbeck for the final 5-10 minutes?
I mean, we didn't really have any other option. When you need a goal, those are the only people we have on the bench capable of providing a semblance of a goal threat.
Do I hint a dig at Wenger for selling Giroud by any chance?
Yes. I was livid whenever he threw Lacazette on and Aubameyang immediately went to the left wing. I don't understand that one bit. You've got one of the best, arguably statistically the best striker in Europe on your team, you need a goal, and your first priority is, well, let's put him on the wing. That going down to the bare bones of it is a stupid decision. I don't know what he had in mind tactically. Maybe he had some great Wenger-like plan to have him be like a sneaky second striker, but the first thing Aubameyang did was push off to the left touchline, which to me makes absolutely no sense. You know, Welbeck did his usual thing where he got in a really good position, and then I don't even know if he touched the touch. He's just, his inability, his feet are like just giant stone blocks. It's like he has no control over them at all.
They just Bambi on ice in the penalty area.
Yeah, it just,
you know the old Abue chant where it's like he just can't control his feet. the blame it on the Boogie Michael Jackson song.
Yeah.
That's now Danny Welbeck. He just can't control his feet. Yeah.
And you know, I thought Iwobi was awful, except for that one unbelievable pass that I'm still not convinced he meant to make. It was just whenever he found Lacazette, it was just it was one of the best ground passes I've seen. I don't know how he pulled it off. But before that, it was just all misplayed passes, and he looked like everybody else. He looked panicked. He looked like he wasn't up for the stakes of the game. He looked like he'd never played in front of 80,000 people before, which granted not many people have. But you got to be up for the challenge, and I don't think any of our subs were up for the challenge.
Yeah, he just looked like he didn't quite understand the pace of the game, did he, when he came on. he had a couple of bad touches. There was a couple of passes where he literally passed it straight to a Spurs player, and it was, not a promising performance from Iwobi, to be fair. Henry, what did you make of Wenger's decision to shunt Aubameyang out onto the left-hand side?
I mean, I wasn't a fan. And during and following the game itself, I actually tweeted out, did we miss Giroud today? Because whilst I've already mentioned that we seem to have this tactic of playing on the counter-attack, but I thought one issue that we possibly had was that we couldn't get out for large parts of the game. And towards the end of the game, you could argue that a figurehead for our attacks would have been useful. But then we had a couple of chances where obviously Lacazette was played in and behind. But I think we do miss... I thought, for me personally, I know it's not quite what you asked, but I thought we missed Giroud yesterday in a few aspects of the game. With regards to the substitutions that were made late on, they didn't really inspire me with confidence. The Lacazette, obviously, I was happy with, but Iwobi and Welbeck, I thought, it's hardly... I mean, you look at United, and at full strength, they've got probably Rashford, Ibrahimovic on the bench. And I think we sold, as I said numerous times throughout the entire transfer window, if we sell Giroud, we are selling our best plan B. And I think we saw the issues arise from that on yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I'll offer up a slight defence for Wenger's decision to shift Aubameyang to the left. Essentially, it's space. Both Aubameyang and Lacazette need space to work in. And if you put them together late in games when Spurs are likely to sit deep and try and compact the space, you're only limiting the area of the picks that they can work in. And because they're both quick players, especially Aubameyang, you want him to be able to be in a position where he can run in behind the opposition with space to run into. And actually, you saw it on a couple of occasions off that left wing. There was one where he was, I think it was just offside when Mesut Ozil found him with the pass. Or he might have been onside, I can't remember. And he ran off the back of Kieran Trippier into the space out wide. And then obviously with Lacazette and the chance that we'll get onto, again, that was the fact that there was space in behind for him to make a run into. Now, admittedly, Davinson Sanchez should have dealt with that, but he didn't. And the reason why he didn't was because there was space for Iwobi to play that pass into. I think if you were to put them both up front, perhaps they might link up well, but you're limiting the space that Arsenal can work in. Early in the game, that's all right because you've got time, you can be a bit more patient, and you can slowly build pressure. When you've only got 15, 20 minutes to go and try and nick a goal, you need to be able to stretch the pitch as wide as possible, which against a defence that are going to sit deep is far more difficult with two central attackers.
I think that it comes down to not having the right personnel, though, because I get wanting to spread it wide. That's a perfectly legitimate point. But Aubameyang's not the guy to do that. He's a finisher. He's not a winger. I think this comes down to us not having a legitimate winger. And, you know, that's a situation where they both do need space, but there's enough space centrally that if they split, if they move far enough apart to put maybe one person on each corner of the 18-yard box, you just got more space now. But then again, you need wingers that can keep the game wide, otherwise it's all pointless. So you're right, it makes sense that he would put him out there to widen the game. It's just that Aubameyang's not the guy to do that. You need an actual winger and not a world-class striker who's known for his finishing and little more.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with that. The problem is Arsenal don't really have that winger, which in the restrictions that Wenger had, I think it was the right thing to do. And perhaps if you have a Mahrez or a Mohamed Salah type player who is a proper chalk on your boots winger, then absolutely, I would be quite frustrated to see Aubameyang stunted out onto the left wing when you've got a proper winger on the bench, like Theo Walcott. Here he is again. If you had Theo Walcott as a proper winger that you can
he's
bring
not on. A winger. He's not a winger.
He's playing well for Everton.
He's playing he well for Everton. Grant.
He's not a striker either. So what is he?
He's an inside forward.
Good old Theo. Right, let's move on to the substitute who's perhaps garnered the most interest and debate over the last 24 hours or so. Lacazette had a little bit of a stinker, I think that's fair to say. Josh, are you worried about our now starting Frenchman?
There are a lot of things I'm worried about with him. You know, it sucks that he's being treated the way he is, just kind of being shoved to the side. But I like to think of it as Wenger sort of giving him a win or break, which he hasn't gotten. And we've seen this before, going from a league where you get winter off, coming to the Premier League where you're expected to play your most congested schedule in that winter break, it's really hard to do. And, you know, it's just, you give him this time off, and I get that confidence is kind of an issue with him. Not kind of, it is an issue with him. You can see it in his face. He's got that sort of pouty look. And, you know, it really just comes down to a matter of Lacazette, does he want to be here or not? I mean, I hate to be asking that 6 months into his Arsenal career, but it really is kind of an issue now where you wonder if he's kind of said, well, if this is how it's going to be, I'll just try to jailbreak in the summer. And, you know, Rio Ferdinand talked about Lacazette, said he needs to confront Wenger and say, you know, I'm here, I'm ready to fight, you got to play me. But I think the only person Lacazette needs to confront is himself. He needs to figure out what he wants. He needs to buckle down, because the runs that he made were great, but this isn't the first time where he's kind of squibbed chances that he's here to put away. I keep thinking back to the Southampton one where he tried to chip the keeper and it was just terrible. And there are many more besides that. Not many more, but enough that this isn't an isolated issue. And I think it all comes down to confidence. And maybe he was losing confidence from being taken off in the 70th minute or so. But the way to build that confidence back isn't to sort of, woe is me, my situation sucks. It's put away your damn chances and then worry about it later. Because if you put away your chances, you're far less likely to be taken off than if you're struggling to put away those chances. So he needs to figure out what he wants, if he wants to be here, if he wants to compete, because it's not looking good right now.
No, I agree completely. I do wonder if Wenger hasn't treated him exactly brilliantly. I guess you look at how tentative he was to play Lacazette when he signed him, who's a club record transfer, and when he was signed was in theory the attacking spearhead of this team. Then he does exactly the same for Aubameyang, and within 2 days he's starting in Lacazette's place. Maybe that, in terms of your people management, perhaps that wasn't the best decision, and he may have been better at least starting both of them, or maybe starting Lacazette and bringing on Aubameyang. Certainly, I think Lacazette would have been happier for the opportunity to try and prove himself. And he obviously didn't come off the bench in that game either. Now, admittedly, there were kind of adverse circumstances. Monreal came off at half-time. Petr Cech got injured. But still, I definitely think that did affect Lacazette's confidence. Having said that, he's also not playing well enough. Not just in this game, where he missed two chances that I don't think neither of them are gilt eggs, but they're both decent opportunities that a top-class striker should be scoring at least one of them. I wrote an article on Pain in the Arsenal saying Harry Kane would have scored that, and it may be a bit of a crude kind of comparison. You know, you never know whether one striker will score one and another striker will score another one, and all strikers do miss good opportunities. But Lacazette, I think it was in August with an interview with Thierry Henry, basically said, I'm here to score key goals at the key time. And I can't really think of a more key goal at a more key time this season, and he missed, which is somewhat disappointing. And really, he kind of needs to get his act together. Mm. We play Östersund on Thursday, and I think that will be a real. I assume he's going to start because Aubameyang is cup tied, and that will be a real test of his mettle, really, to see if he can perform when the pressure is on and when the questions are being asked and when his place in the team is certainly under much doubt. Can he deliver? Can he prove himself the £47 million that Wenger deemed him worth in the summer? Henry, are you concerned about Lacazette's, both his performance on Saturday, his general confidence and his general demeanour, and then also moving forward for the rest of the year?
I'm certainly concerned. I was speaking with my dad, and as soon as he missed the chance, my dad turned to me and he said, he's gone in the summer night. And I didn't really have anything to answer that statement with, simply because I, at that moment, I thought it's very possible he could leave in the summer if things continue as they are. We discussed it in the last podcast. We'd love to see them played together, both Aubameyang and Lacazette, simply because they're our best strikers. They're one of our best 11 players. And possibly you could argue that one of the benefits for Arsenal of being in their current predicament is that they will have some time to experiment, if you will, and maybe going two up top and sacrificing a midfielder might be something that happens later on this season.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if Wenger believes that I've just got a crowbar Lacazette into my team just to give him some playing time and try and give him some confidence, because I'm sure Wenger doesn't want to lose him at the end of the year. He would have to go and sign another striker after Olivier Giroud leaves. So again, it's just more turnover at a position that has not really been settled for Arsenal since Van Persie left, and even when it was settled under Giroud, there was much controversy and much debate and much uncertainty about actually how good he was or and all of those kind of things. Another new signing who didn't perform to his best, let's put it that way, Henrik Mkhitaryan. Gosh, he was terrible, wasn't he, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I get why it might be tough for him. You've just sort of been freed from jail, from being suffocated by Mourinho, not being included, and you're at a team that, you know, he did say back in, I believe it was 2009, this was the team he always followed. So I'm sure there's a good deal of pressure. You'd like to see a professional be able to handle that pressure, but I think it was just a case of, it was a really big game, and I don't think that he was mentally prepared for it. Again, I mean, you can't really spare him the blame just because, I mean, I want to spare him the blame just because I personally like who he is as a player, but you really can't do that. He needs to be better prepared. I mean, some of those, there was one play in particular where he had the ball on that left-hand side and Aubameyang, I could see his head poking out in front of everybody else. All Mkhitaryan had to do was put in a workable ball, and he, I don't even know how to explain it. It was just, the ball disappeared and straight up, and it wasn't the first time. He did it again.
No.
He did it again, and then later on, he played a good pass, and the announcer said, oh, well, there we go. There's the Mkhitaryan. I'm like, well, we're 30 minutes in. He just played his first good pass. This is not a good way to kick off your first North London derby. I'm not worried about him, though. I mean, I read some panic article that said he was just like another Shinji Kagawa. He was a benefit, or he benefited from a good system at Dortmund. That's not true. I mean, obviously he benefited, but Mkhitaryan will be just fine. I just think that the game, the hugeness of the game got to him, but that's the kind of thing that you get used to.
I am slightly worried for him in terms of whether he's going to be like a bit of a Mesut Ozil or early Mesut Ozil, can he perform in the big games type thing. Because if Wenger keeps going with this pragmatic, conservative defensive approach, we've seen it at Manchester United, it just doesn't suit him. He doesn't like it. Mourinho didn't like him because he specifically didn't like it. And if Wenger takes a similar approach, then I think Mkhitaryan will continue to struggle in those games. He is a front foot, aggressive, I want to press and be energetic, and he's that kind of player. He's not a disciplined, diligent, track the overlapping fullback type winger. It's just not who he is, and he certainly doesn't excel in that kind of system. Having said that, we are, he played 170 minutes into his Arsenal career. There is a long, long, long way to go. Let's just see what happens. He's clearly talented. He had a difficult 18 months at United where I think his confidence was really, took a good and could beat him, really. Let's just give him a bit of time to acclimatise to a new team under a new manager in a new city. There's a long way to go, isn't there, with Mkhitaryan, and this was one game. And a week ago he was phenomenal, so I don't think you can say that one is more important or less important than the other, and we'll just see where it goes, won't we? One thing I do want to ask both of you, I'll start with you, Henry. for me, this game highlighted the absence of Santi Cazorla more than any game I've seen this season, just because of how Arsenal failed to deal with Spurs' high press, especially in the midfield. When the ball came into, Granit Xhaka or El Nene, and then it was passed back to Mustafi Kajoni, and then Cech had a few very, very dodgy dodgy moments where he tried to beat a Spurs. Was it Dele Alli? He tried to knock the ball past or something. There was a few pretty hairy moments. So, did you feel the same way, that this was a real Santi Cazorla-less game, that it was quite obvious?
Do you know what? I hadn't even considered that idea until you just asked. And as soon as you brought it up...
That's why I asked
the first thing that came to my mind was the away game at Manchester City a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember an occasion where he dribbled past three or four players at such close quarters. And perhaps that is what was missing. But he is, we all know how good he is as a player. And he's been a big miss for a long time. Who knows? He might have made Granit Xhaka look pretty good. He made Francis Coquelin look... he made Francis Coquelin look pretty good for a long time, you could argue. But... he's a big miss. He's always been a big miss ever since he went down. That's a really interesting point, though, that you made there, simply because thinking about the game, thinking about how Tottenham hounded us all game, especially defending from the front, it would have been interesting to have placed him in that game to see what would have changed or what would have been different.
Yeah. Josh, do you feel that Cazorla was badly missed in this type of game?
I mean, he's always badly missed, but to be fair, I thought Wilshere did a... I mean, there were a lot of people saying that Wilshere was terrible. I thought he actually did a very good job, a Cazorla-like job, in tight spaces where he was... I mean, he wasn't as good as Cazorla, but he had... I'm more amazed than I have been before at Wilshere's ability to handle tight spaces.
Me too.
And I think he actually did pretty well with that. Elneny and Xhaka didn't, but they weren't... They didn't really try as much. Rather than go through tight spaces, they would just pass backwards or pass it to each other. Wilshere actually did a good job of navigating those spaces, and his quick burst, his ability to see an opening and just zip through it, reminds me a lot of Cazorla. Neither one of them's blazingly fast, but they have a really quick first step. They're really good at hitting that gap. And then, you know, I don't think Wilshere was as clinical with his drives as Cazorla is, but... he's getting better at it, and I think that he's actually shaping up to be a very Cazorla-like midfielder.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that he was good, and the problem you said that Elneny and Xhaka tended to pass backwards a lot of the time, and that's the problem for me. And I'm not just pinning this on Elneny and Xhaka; just generally, Arsenal pass backwards too much. Especially against the high press, they wanted to keep the ball too much, and you have to be a little bit more direct or just a little bit better on the ball, like a Cazorla or Wiltshire, to be able to have that composure to get up and play forward.
Honestly, I thought Elneny was much more guilty of that than Xhaka. I'm not just saying this because I have to defend Xhaka.
That might actually be true. For once.
I don't know what to say now. Everybody's agreeing with me. He's just not a dribbler, but he did do a good job of passing the ball forward. I mean, I kept saying all match that Elneny was playing with his back to the goal, only he was playing with his back to the wrong goal. He was playing with his back to the opposing goal, so he'd get the ball, and all he would see are the defenders, our defenders, and he'd want to give it to one of them. And it's not a conducive way to, obviously, it's not a conducive way to move forward if you're not even looking forward.
No. I compared all of their performances to Moussa Dembélé's.
Ugh.
And they're not in the same... They're not in the same class.
Well, Elneny, I feel like Elneny was there to be our Dembélé, which is kind of a joke in and of itself. I completely agree that he's not in the same... But I think that's what he was there to do. He was there to be that presence, that force, and he's never going to be that. I don't think... I mean, we know this already. Xhaka's not a Dembélé type. That's not what he's here to do. So
he should be. He should be.
You can't just say a player should be a different type of player. That's not who he is.
He costs £35 million, man.
It doesn't mean he's going to do everything.
Are you two done? Are you okay?
I'm never done.
He actually played quite well. I've just had enough. I was just watching Moussa Dembélé thinking, oh, wouldn't this player be brilliant in an Arsenal team alongside Aaron Ramsey and Jack Wilshere?
We probably nearly signed him, as knowing us as well, when he was an 18-year-old kid in Belgium, or wherever he was.
Before he signed for Fulham for, what was it, £10
million? He was at Fulham?
Wenger.
Shut the front door.
No
way.
They actually signed him. He was actually a striker when they signed him. He was a striker, and then they moved him into an attacking midfield position. Spurs bought him as an attacking midfielder, and he's gradually worked his way backwards, and now I think he's in his absolute element. I think he's an excellent player. Anyway, that's enough gushing about a Spurs player.
Well, actually, I want to continue gushing about the Spurs player to an extent, simply because I think it highlighted more than anything the gulf in class between the personnel of Tottenham and our personnel to an extent. I mean, if you looked across the board, part of me thinks you looked across that midfield, who would you have taken? Xhaka and Elneny or Moussa Dembélé and Eric Dier?
Well, it's two different strategies.
I think Dembélé and Dier would have worked in either strategy, if I'm being brutally
honest. But Dembélé and Dier are pretty one-dimensional players. Elneny is incredibly one-dimensional too, but here we go. Granit Xhaka is not a one-dimensional player. He's got that... Oh, I'm not even going to do it. I get what you're saying. We need defensive help in the midfield. We absolutely do. But you can't just keep pinning our lack of a defensive midfielder on Granit Xhaka.
I was more attributing to the gulfing class between some of the squad members. And the table obviously reflects that with how it'll end up inevitably this season and last season. They are a better squad of players.
You'll have to forgive me. I tend to lash out when Granit Xhaka is called into the question. I think that where Spurs have the benefit is that they have the right type of players, where we just don't. We kind of have, I think our starting 11 and a few subs are good, but then we've just kind of got this hodgepodge of people that really aren't going to challenge for a starting spot, and they're not really fitting into our system. Whereas Spurs, all of their subs, I mean, I didn't study their bench, but the substitutes that I've seen...
The Spurs bench yesterday is one of the strongest Spurs benches I've seen in years. It was, I'll run through it for you. It was outstanding. So they had Danny Rose, and then Michel Vorm and Serge Aurier. They were their defensive players. Then they had Victor Wanyama, who can, and Moussa Sissoko, who, for all of his faults, at least he can run, which for the last 20 minutes is not necessarily a bad thing. Then you had Lucas Moura, their new signing as well, and Eric Lamela, who I actually think is underrated as a player. That's a very, very strong bench. For example, they didn't have a player like Fernando Llorente on the bench.
As opposed to what was our bench? Did we have like Eddie Nketiah on there who was never going to play?
Not quite. Okay. So we had Ospina and Callum Chambers and then Maitland-Niles. And then Kolasinac as well, and then Iwobi, Lacazette, and what's his face, Welbeck.
Okay, so it's not as bad as I thought, but it's still, you've got players in there that you're really not going to use and that don't fit into the system. It's just, you have to have practical substitutes, otherwise you're just sending on the same players because you just don't have anyone else. And that's
put it this way, every player, ignoring the keeper, every player on the Spurs bench, and then obviously Lucas Moura, who's the new signing, will start games in a season when they're fit. In that Arsenal team, you've got, or Arsenal bench, you've got Kolasinac, you've got Lacazette, and then maybe Iwobi. I don't really
not,
think
not
Callum Chambers.
Yeah, please, no. No.
If you think, when everyone's fit, I don't really think Callum Chambers will start that many games. Neither will Welbeck, really. Neither will Maitland-Niles. Kolasinac might do. There's a big gulf in those benches. Which is, traditionally, that's been Arsenal's strength against Spurs, is that they've always had the stronger squad, where Spurs have had a very good first 11, but a few key injuries have killed them. Whereas now, at the moment, their squad is extremely well-rounded.
I mean, for me, it's only a possibly a little under a year ago where I was quick to praise our squad depth, but now it just seems relatively non-existent. You look at, I know I've been full of praise for Bellerin's performance, full of praise is perhaps a bit strong, but there's no one to challenge him. And there have been there have been performances which have been shaky, to say the least. The fact that we have Elneny and Coquelin behind Xhaka and neither could really take advantage of his poor displays speaks volumes. I mean, neither were going to, but it speaks volumes, and it's worrying because it could mean a huge turnover of personnel in the summer, I fear.
Yes, it is. It's a dark time to be an Arsenal fan. Not a happy gooner. Not a happy gooner is easy to find at the moment. One last question before we take a break. Do you now think that the top four is beyond this team? I will just bring up the table for you. Liverpool have just beaten Southampton. That game finished about 20 minutes ago as we're recording. So they won 2-0. So they are now nine points clear, if I do my maths right. Yeah, 9 points clear of Arsenal. Spurs are 7 points clear of Arsenal. Chelsea are 5 points clear with a game in hand. United, who actually lost to Newcastle today, they're 11 points clear, but that's probably a gap too big to catch. Do you think Arsenal can catch any of them within reason? Josh, what do you think? You tend to be the more hopeful of us.
Seeing as how you're both already shaking your heads, I have to say that, yes, I do think they can still make it into the top four. That said, I don't think we should be stressing about it. I don't think it's worth going balls to the wall thinking, oh, we have to catch all these. We don't have to. Just focus on the Europa League. Settle for fifth or sixth. I guess sixth, since most it's pretty much the same as getting into the top four, getting up in the fifth. But it's just I think they could, but then again, this is Arsenal, and you know, I could see them getting within 2 points and then just tanking again because it's Arsenal. So yeah, they could, but I don't think they need to. They shouldn't.
No, I actually agree. I don't think they can't. I think the chances are probably about 5% at best. And even that might be a little bit kind, but I do think they can. Again, I don't think they will, and I certainly won't be holding my breath over it. Just an update on how close they are to the top and bottom of the league standings. They are now 25 points above the bottom of the Premier League, which is West Brom on 20 points, and West Brom have a game in hand. They are 27 points off the top of the table. So Arsenal are currently closer to 20th than they are first. Not a particularly nice stat, but unfortunately there aren't many nice stats at the moment regarding this football team. So we will take a short break, and on the other side we will answer a myriad of Twitter questions, on which we have one rather interesting exploration, I guess, into Josh and Xhaka's potential relationship. We'll see you in just a second. Welcome back to the second part of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew, I'm with Henry and Josh here, and we have some lovely Twitter questions. The first, and obviously most exciting of which, comes from Daniel Finton, who's a writer at Pain in the Arsenal. You can check out his stuff at the Pain in the Arsenal website, at Daniel_Finton. He says, last but not least, and it absolutely is not least, does at SitNator101, which is Josh, have a love connection with Xhaka? So, Josh, I give you the floor.
Okay, so I prepared a statement. I didn't even bother to memorize it, so I'm just going to read it. I have a love affair with Xhaka as in the extent that I overcompensate for an ungrateful and fickle fan base.
I don't understand
how this is the exact same thing that happened with Giroud, and this is the exact reason why I found such a liking for Giroud, because fans were asking Giroud, why can't he do the things that Van Persie did or that Sergio Aguero is doing. It's a different player. Asking Xhaka to tackle better, and I'll get to this later. He is improving in that area. It's like being upset with Aubameyang if he doesn't create enough chances out wide. That's not his job. If you want to be upset at Lacazette for not scoring, absolutely, that's his job. Granted, Xhaka's job is to make intelligent passes, to control the middle of the field, which, you know, it's a work in progress still. But being upset that our midfield gets overrun and pinning it all on Xhaka is just grossly irresponsible. It's a cheap way to say this team has a problem, I don't want to figure it out, so I'm going to point at Granit Xhaka and say he's the reason why this is happening. The main concerns we've always had with Xhaka that other people have had, his disciplinary problems and the fact that he can't defend well, both of which have improved vastly since his first year. I think of, you know, when Francis Coquelin first came back, he had major disciplinary problems and they went away. And Granit Xhaka had major disciplinary problems. He would lose the ball. He would lash out, make a silly tackle. That's bad. You don't want that. He doesn't do that anymore. Just about all the yellow cards he's gotten this year, I've nodded my head and said, no, that's a good yellow card. He was either compensating for something that a teammate dropped the ball on, or it was a tackle that needed to be made to stop a counterattack. And if you look at his yellow card, his numbers, he's got 5 yellow cards in the year. It's nowhere near the top of the Premier League, not even close. You've got Emre Can with 8, Oriol Romeo with 8. These are, you know, his direct counterparts who have played less minutes than him. So his disciplinary problems aren't a problem anymore. And I can't stand it when people say, "Oh, he's a crapshoot in the middle because he makes rash decisions." That's the old Xhaka. You're not watching him anymore if he keeps saying he's got disciplinary problems. And his passing, look at what he did against Tottenham. He completed 94% of his passes. Only Moussa Dembele completed more than that. All of his, most of his forward passes were intelligent passes. They push play forward, which that's what he's here to do. He's not here to break people's shins with crunching tackles. That's not what he does. That said, he's getting better at his tackles. Guess the only person who had completed more defensive actions against Tottenham was Shkodran Mustafi, who is a very active defender. But Granit Xhaka was right there with him. He was defending well. His tackles have been much better. And he's monitoring passing lanes much better. I get that he's got his downfalls. I get that we need a better defensive midfielder. And I think if you get a defensive midfielder to sit in there behind Xhaka where Elneny is, then you see the best in Granit Xhaka. He is being failed by this system. He is not failing the team. The team is failing him. And I don't say that. I get why they put him in a deeper role. I think Arsene Wenger was hoping that his team was defensively solid enough that he wouldn't need as much of a defensive presence there. That's been proven wrong, which is why he's been moved out of that defensive role into a role that fits him better. But now he needs somebody to guard him better, to guard his back better, just like Aaron Ramsey did. Ramsey was not a defensive midfielder, and that was fine. He wasn't a winger either. He wasn't that good until you gave him that freedom that he had with the Welsh national team. Once you did that, you unlocked the best Ramsey. Now you just have to unlock the best Xhaka, and gradually we're working our way towards it. It drives me nuts that people make fun of me for defending him when all these arguments that people are making are either grounded in what he did last year or grounded in he's not the player they want him to be. I'm sorry that he's not the player you want him to be. Just appreciate the player that he is, because he's not going to change who he is because you're upset that he's not who you wanted. And I think that's it. So I'll take a bow and pass it off to you.
We've just hit 5 minutes on recording for this second little section. That is the best 5 minutes of this podcast that we have ever produced, and it's not even close. I feel better.
And relax.
We're not even going to have a discussion on that. I'm just going to leave it at that, because that was brilliant, quite frankly.
I mean, I'm just going to say that Moussa Dembele is a Rolls Royce, but there we go.
Right.
Hey, Granit Xhaka's an SUV. Yeah, it's a different kind of car.
I'd rather have a Rolls Royce.
Staunch and passionate. That was magnificent. Magnificent. A couple of other questions from Daniel Finton. One of them actually could be about Granit Xhaka.
No.
We'll discuss the other one for a bit. how would you rate El Nene's performance? Henry, seeing as Josh needs to rest his voice, what do you think about El Nene?
I mean, we've discussed it already. Me personally, I thought he was quite anonymous. I mean, the entire midfield essentially had to sacrifice themselves in order to prevent Tottenham from really getting at us, especially in the first half. But I didn't think he was particularly great in the scheme of things. I thought he was fine, but nothing really special.
Yeah, I thought it was a kind of meh performance. He kind of didn't do much wrong. I don't think he really did much right either. He definitely wasn't the solution to the problem. Yeah. A bit like I would say Xhaka was as well, was that the and Xhaka was better than El Nene in this game, but
yeah,
neither were, you know, taking responsibility and truly dominating the game and controlling the game from the midfield. Both were a little bit passive, but they worked hard, they were disciplined, they were industrious, and you know what you're going to get from El Nene. You're going to get a 6 out of 10, 5 out of 10, maybe a 7 out of 10 every now and then. Josh, I know you gave him a 0 in the player ratings, maybe you want to offer a slightly different perspective.
I'd be happy to. I mean, you know, I've said this before. He plays with his back to the wrong goal. He plays with his back to the opposing goal, which is so counterintuitive. You know, I feel bad to always rant on Nene because I do appreciate who he is as a player, which is what people won't do for Xhaka. I appreciate his limitation. I understand his limitations. But I think he did make a there were two passes in particular that he made that were really, really poor. There was one where he headed the ball backwards in our box whenever there were like 6 Spurs players in there. I think he was hoping it would make its way back to Petr Cech. It never did. Skriniar Mustafi had to boot the ball out, but that was a terrible pass. And he doesn't seem to understand sometimes that when you're passing the ball around your own box, you can't pass it like you would in the middle of the field. I thought there were a few times against Spurs where he unnecessarily put the club at risk because of a pass that didn't seem to have the urgency against a team with a high press. He did not bring anything to the game, not a single thing. I don't think he brought an ounce of control. I would love to see figures on how many passes he made that went forward. It just, and like I said earlier, he didn't complete a single defensive action, didn't complete a single chance, a shot, anything. He didn't contribute a thing to the game. And again, that's not entirely his fault. This isn't the kind of game that's meant for El Nini. Not even close. You need a higher quality player than that. You know, if you want to play him against mid-table, low-table teams in side competitions, absolutely, he's a great option. But in this kind of game, not a chance.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said there. Certainly, we know what he is, and this isn't the type of game for him. You need top quality midfielders against a top quality team, and El Nene just isn't that. He's solid, isn't he? He's good, he's reliable, but he's nothing better than that, really. Final question from Daniel Fenton. Who is Arsenal's most abused scapegoat? Josh, I think we can probably guess who your answer is. Henry, who do you think is Arsenal's most abused scapegoat?
To offer something different, I'll say Alex Iwobi, who once again didn't really cover himself in glory this weekend. Apparently some of his actions following the game were hardly exemplary either.
Mm. Do you want to expand on that just for those that weren't quite aware of such?
Well, supposedly, according to my inside source, aka Mr. DT from Arsenal Fan TV, he went over towards the Arsenal fans at the end of the game, but was looking towards the corporate boxes and giving a gesture of ring me to someone in the corporate boxes. It's not really the attitude DT was arguing now that you really want from a player following a defeat to a local rival. I mean, I can understand it from ring me or following a game, you have family there or whatnot, it's a local game for him. But I think recent performances haven't been good, and he hasn't really developed since his breakthrough into the team a few years back. I still don't know what position suits him best. I still don't know what he excels at as a player, really. I mean, I mentioned in the last podcast, intricate passes around the area. I can see a future with him in that capacity, but I still can't place him. I find him a really tough player to evaluate.
Yep, I think that's fair enough. Josh, other than Granit Xhaka, who do you think is Arsenal's most abused scapegoat?
I don't think Iwobi is a scapegoat just because I think that most of the criticism he gets is deserved. I consider a scapegoat somebody that like Xhaka, who gets way too much criticism in proportion to the mistakes he does make. I think Ramsey's always been a scapegoat for Arsenal. It's less so this year because he's done so well, but he still gets abuse sometimes when he's not playing well, especially from that one super fan on Twitter who just really, really doesn't like Aaron Ramsey for whatever reason. I don't like to say him by name because I really don't like him. But Xhaka, Ramsey. I think Mustafi gets too much abuse too. I think he's a perfectly capable defender that again, I don't think the system favors him, but I don't think he's, you know, not Arsenal quality. I think he's actually a pretty elite defender that just doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Yeah, it's quite a difficult question to answer because, like you said, scapegoat implies that they are better players than the general consensus deems them to be, but all Arsenal players are bollocks, so really you can't be a scapegoat if you're rubbish. So I kind of find it quite hard to answer. The one possibility could be Hector Bellerin. I think sometimes he's often criticised for his kind of interest in fashion and his kind of willingness to be quite active on social media and stuff like that, and that's just ridiculous. Certainly he's not a brilliant player, but a lot of the criticism that is directed his way is a little bit not about his performance.
Yeah, and that's true. I don't think he gets that much criticism beyond... I mean, I don't study his social media trends and habits, so I don't know how much abuse he actually catches on there. But, I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but I feel like Xhaka is the only person whose performances are really like pinned for complete failings. I can't think of another player who people say, well, we lost because of him. I don't think that really happens. Even me in my anti-Iwobi rage have never said, well, we lost because of Iwobi. I don't think that happens, whereas I see people saying we lost because of Xhaka quite too much.
I think in my kind of unbridled kind of fanatical nature, especially if I've had a few pints, I have at least at one point in my life said we lost because of him about every single player in the Arsenal squad, including probably Thierry Henry when I was younger. I said, well, we lost because of him, just because I was angry, not really because I was thinking properly. let's move on to a couple of other questions. We got a question from Bobo Nogodi, which basically says, what do you expect to happen? I assume, what changes do you expect? And if not, Wenger out. So, Josh, at the end of the year, do you think Wenger will be gone or do you think he'll be staying?
No, he's going to stay. I don't know. I still think that he wants to go out in a blaze of glory, and I don't think that a blaze of glory includes winning the Carabao Cup and the Europa League. I don't think that's what he's... I think he wants another chance at the Champions League before he calls it quits, and, well, I guess there's another step to go before he can take that last chance. So it'd be interesting to see what happens if we don't make the Champions League, what he would do. I think that's the only way I could see him forfeiting this, wanting to retire on top. I don't know. That's tough. My gut still says he's going to stay. I'm like 98% sure that he would stay. I don't know why he would call it quits at this point. He's just starting to load up on some quality players.
Yeah, I think what will be interesting will be what does he do in 2019, and obviously what the club does as well. Yeah. That's when his next contract expires. It seems to be a fairly natural end, especially if Arsenal go on to have, say they win the FA Cup next year or something like that. I think maybe the Premier League title might be beyond them without significant spending, and the same with the Champions League or even the Europa League. But maybe they go and win an FA Cup and Wenger says, right, I'll call it a day, having won, my final FA Cup. And I think that would put Arsenal, as long as United don't win it this year, I think that would put Arsenal as the most successful team in FA Cup history, and I think it would make Wenger the most successful manager in FA Cup history as well. I might be wrong on that, but I'm fairly sure that's right. So maybe that's that would be what happens. But I would be surprised if he leaves before 2019. But I think at this point in time, I'd say there's a better chance that he moves on in that summer than there is that he stays right now. Obviously, we will have to see. We've got another question from Brighton, Henry. Why are we losing faith for Lacazette or in Lacazette?
Well, I think we've touched on it for the most part already. He's out of the side at the moment. He's not doing what we expected him to be doing. I mean, granted, I've argued and we've argued that that's been partly due to the fact that he comes off a portion of just about every single game. The service isn't quite right. To me, it's just further elaboration on... I still think he'll come good because I still think when you look at Aubameyang and how old Aubameyang is and you compare the age of the two players, Lacazette is our future. If you want to... He can still be a huge part of our future. I don't really see Aubameyang being here for 4 or 5 years, and I see Lacazette being here for 3 or 4 years or so.
Yep, or another 3 or 4 months.
That's the attitude. Josh, I'm on your side with this one.
depending on what happens. Final question from Douglas Almeida. Why are Arsenal unable to follow the growth of the other big teams in the Premier League? What do you think, Josh?
That's such a complex question.
Yeah, I know.
they've just been so slow on the uptake. I feel like all these other teams have made changes, they've adapted, they've modernized, and Arsenal has insisted on doing it the Arsene Wenger way. And if you wanted to boil it down to one point, I think that would be it. I just think they've fallen behind the modern game, and now they're trying to play catch up.
I would just say that we lack the ruthlessness of the other big teams in regards to this dip in form that we've had for seemingly the last decade or so would not be tolerated at any of the other big sides. Whether you can include Tottenham in that, I'm not too sure because they're more of a newer revelation. But what I will say is that moving forward, we are still a club that has enough prestige that we will still be able to attract big name managers, even when Wenger leaves, because of our history, because of where we are as a club from a geographical location standpoint and from an historic standpoint as well. So I'm not really worried about moving forward, but I think we haven't been ruthless really for the past 10 or so years. When you look at personnel, we've let players stay around who probably should have left a lot earlier, and you could say the same about the manager.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. There's an element of settling that goes on at Arsenal Football Club that doesn't happen at other clubs, and that's at every level. This is not just a Wenger thing. This is at the board. This is in the players, in the coaching staff. Right up to Kroenke. At every level, it's as if they're just not working properly.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. It's like nobody is fighting for anything. Everybody's comfy where they are. The players are, the manager is, the board is. Everybody's comfy. And when you're comfy, whether you like it or not, you get complacent. Yeah. And this club has definitely gotten complacent because when the going gets tough, well, they're still going to have a job. So why step up?
Yep. I agree completely. I think we're all in agreement there. Certainly, if Arsenal are ever going to win a Premier League trophy again, it's going to take quite a lot of change, I think, from the current makeup of the club and the squad and the whole atmosphere of the organisation. Right, let's take one final break before we preview. Thursday nights are back. Before we preview Arsenal's trip to Sweden to play FK Östersund. Hello and welcome to the third part of episode 18 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. I'm with Henry and Josh again, and we are looking forward to Thursday night's trip to Sweden, where Arsenal play FK Östersund, and as you may have guessed, I know absolutely nothing about them. So Henry, who are they?
Gee, thank you, Andy, for that lovely intro to me. I, again, know nothing about them, but in... our current vein of form, I don't think that we should take that fact lightly, considering they could easily turn us over, even though they've seemingly had a couple of months off. But all I know is that it's going to be very, very cold, supposedly. Apparently the away end is like a standalone structure with no protection for the elements, and the average temperature for this time of year is about -5 degrees Celsius. So it's going to be cold, to say the least. But other than that, all I know is that Malmo are in the same division as them in AIK, but that's about it.
Yeah, Sweden is cold. That is what Henry just told us. Thank you. Thank you for that insightful analysis there.
You're welcome.
Certainly, though, I mean, Arsenal are terrible away from home this year, and you know that you don't get much more away than a wintry kind of endeavour over to Sweden. So, there's certainly complacency should not reign, because Arsenal are rubbish away from the Emirates. So, let's not underestimate them. Josh, what do you know about FK Östersund?
I don't know anything about them other than that Sweden is cold.
I stole your line. I like it.
Like Henry said, they haven't started their season yet. They've had a long layoff. Make of that what you will. Obviously, they could lack sharpness, or they could be in the greatest shape of their natural-born lives, and we're up against it. So it's always a question when we go away from home. I just wonder if we're going to be so far away from home that it almost doesn't matter that we're even away from home anymore, which doesn't make any sense. But I'm trying to make it okay that we're going to be away from home, which is just terrifying.
Yes. Let's move on to questions that we may be able to add a little bit more insight into. Josh, how much rotation would you go for? Obviously, Wenger's essentially had two 11s for the majority of the season, the one in the Carabao Cup and the Europa League, and another one in the Premier League. Would you make the same kind of sweeping changes, or would you play a bit more of a stronger team now that it's the knockout stages?
I would play strong, but I mean, most of the people that we had on the bench against Tottenham, I realize I badmouth all of them, but against Östersund, I think it'd be okay to let them all out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much youth you call up. Maybe a Reece Nelson and an Eddie Nketiah just in case. Obviously, we want to see Lacazette out there. We want to see Ainsley Maitland-Niles, hopefully, in a midfield role. That would
Don't bet on it.
I'm not. I think the question is what I would do. If the question is what Wenger would do, it's a completely different answer.
Yes. No. That's an important distinction.
I do want to see a bit of rotation, preferably just because I want to see what players we're not using that might have some value still, because I'm losing a lot of faith in our players that aren't regulars in the starting 11.
One thing to note, and I think it is extremely important actually, Arsenal don't have a game at the weekend, that being next weekend, because it's the FA Cup and they're out of the FA Cup. And the second leg is a week later, and on the weekend after that they have the Carabao Cup final against City on the Sunday. So perhaps there is an argument to be made that Arsenal play their full strength team this Thursday, try and get a good win say 2-0, 3-0, something like that, and then the next Thursday then you begin to make the changes ahead of the Carabao Cup final, and you rest the players that you want to play against Man City. I think that is something that might not be something that Wenger does, but it's certainly something that I would be doing, where I'd be saying, let's try and get a really good advantage before the second leg, and then we can begin to make the sweeping changes and give, if you could give players like you know, Jack Wilshere or Aaron Ramsey or Mustafi and Koscielny, if they play this Thursday and then you can give them 10 days off before the Carabao Cup final, that could make an absolutely huge difference. It's definitely something that I would be doing. Henry, do you agree on that one?
I wouldn't be risking Koscielny and Ramsey with their injuries, especially Ramsey if he has a muscular injury in the cold. Yeah, no, thank you. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think we'll see a stronger team for sure, because I think we need confidence at the minute, especially away from home. Let's go away and batter somebody. I think it would make us feel a lot better, even if it is temporarily. But
You may be a little bit overly ambitious.
Yeah,
there.
I know. But
I can't remember the last time Arsenal have gone. Was it Everton the last time they went away and battered somebody?
I think so.
It might have been Everton. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the game because I think we'll win the tie overall and that we'll progress, touch wood. But regardless of that, I think we'll be fine. Although I'm saying that, I'm having horrible recollections of Monaco a few years back in the Champions League.
Yes. Yes, I am too. It wouldn't surprise me to see Arsenal lose this game.
Where Jeffrey Condoglia scored a worldie for memory and he bossed them in midfield.
Yeah.
And he's now playing with Francis Coquelin, the lucky boy.
Is he?
Yeah,
is
Valencia.
Yeah. Right, would you now, especially after Saturday's loss, Josh, would you now focus on the Europa League and that become the main priority of the season for the remaining months?
Yeah, absolutely. However, being an Arsenal fan, I've been spoiled with always being in the top four, so I'm not sure what goes into focusing on a side competition. So I'm going to do the illogical thing and trust that Arsene Wenger knows best.
Oh, gosh.
I said it, and I was like, ooh, do I really want to do that?
But yeah, I'm not sure I'm ready for that step. That might be too far for me. Henry, are you on the same line of thinking that the Europa League is now not the be all and end all, but certainly the number one priority this season?
I think I've been vocal in stating that it's been the priority since August and September. So nothing's really changed from my perspective. I don't think we'll have it as easy as Manchester United did last season, considering all the teams that are left in the competition. But we, for some reason, tend to do quite well in knockout phases. When you look at the FA Cup in recent years, we just lack the consistency to do it over a longer period of time. So hopefully that translates into a European competition and that it can be our golden ticket back into the European elite competition.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully so. I'm sure Arsenal will have many surprises for us before now and the end of the year. They always seem to. Fellas, I think we're there. Is there anything else you want to say, Arsenal or non-Arsenal related?
We doing score predictions?
No. Because last time we did this, it was like Tottenham we're gonna win. And no.
Go on. Henry, what's your score prediction?
I'll go 3-0 Arsenal.
Oh, gosh. Josh.
Get out the way.
I'm feeling a 2-0, and I think it's going to be nervy. I really do.
Yeah, I'm with Josh. I'll go 2-0, and I think it's going to be one of those where they just have the ball for ages, but they never really create that much.
Until the last 10 minutes, and then they score twice.
Yeah, and then Östersund looked deceptively dangerous on the break a couple of times.
And then they
have some quick right winger.
And their goalkeeper's David De Gea in disguise. Problems.
Yeah. I could just see it coming from a mile away. I'm a bit worried. Anyway, there we go. So thank you very much for listening, guys. We will see you. I guess we'll record after the Östersund game, given that there's no game at the weekend. We'll make sure to have a conversation about that and let you guys know. I'm sorry for Arsenal's performance on Saturday. I genuinely feel partly responsible now. Now that I kind of, you know, write on the team and record podcasts, I genuinely feel guilty when they lose. I know that's ridiculous, but I just do. I have so much responsibility in them now. I feel almost like I've done something wrong to cause them such loss. So, yes, apologies for the depressing nature of this podcast, but thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you later in the week. Goodbye.